Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 24, given in Bombay, India.
The first question. I feel neither I am a feeling type altogether, nor an intellectual type. I am a mixed type. Should I exercise both the techniques alternately, or what should I do? This is a significant question. Many things will have to be understood. One, whenever you feel that you are neither the intellectual type nor the emotional type, know well you belong to the intellectual type. Because confusion is part of it. The emotional type is never confused. So one who belongs to the emotional type will not feel such confusion. Emotion is always total and whole. Intellect is always fragmentary, divided, confused. That is the very nature of intellect. Why? Because intellect depends on doubt and emotion depends on faith. Wherever doubt is, division will be. And doubt can never be total. How it can be? The very nature of doubt is doubting. It can never be total. You cannot doubt a thing totally. If you doubt a thing totally, it becomes faith. Doubt is always confusing. And basically, when you doubt, you also doubt your doubt. You cannot be certain about it. A doubting mind cannot be even certain about doubt. So layers of confusion will be there. And each layer will be based on another layer of doubt and confusion. So intellectual type always feels this way. But the feeling will be always there that I am nowhere. I don't belong anywhere. Sometimes I am here and sometimes there. Sometimes this and sometimes that. But the emotional type is at ease with itself. Because trust is the base. Emotion is not divided. It is whole, indivisible. So if you have any doubt, I cannot feel certain to what type you belong. Know well, you belong to the intellectual type. And then practice techniques which are meant for the intellectual type. If you don't feel any confusion, then only you belong to the emotional type, the feeling type. For example, a Ramakrishna, he is a feeling type. You cannot create doubt in him. That's impossible. Because a doubt can be created only when basically the doubt exists already. No one can create doubt in you if it was already not hidden there. Others can only help it to come out. They cannot create it. Neither faith can be created. That too, others can help it to manifest, to come out. Your basic type cannot be changed. So it is very essential to know the basic type, because if you are doing something which doesn't suit, fit with you, you are wasting time and energy, and you will get more and more confused because of your wrong efforts. Neither doubt can be created in you, nor faith. You have already the seed, either of this or that. If you have doubt, then it is better not to think of faith at all, because that will be a deception and hypocrisy. If you have doubt, don't be afraid. Even doubt can lead to the divine. You have to use it. I will repeat, even doubt can lead to the divine. Because if your doubt can destroy divine, then it is stronger, more powerful than the divine. Even doubt can be used. It can be made a technique. But don't deceive. There are persons who go on teaching that if you have doubts, you can never reach to the divine. So what to do? You have. Force it, suppress it, hide it, create a false belief. That will be only on the surface. It will never touch your soul. Deep down you will remain in doubt, and just on the surface a facet will be created of belief. That is the difference between faith and belief. Belief is always false. Faith is a quality, belief is a conception. Faith is the quality of your mind, belief just acquired. So those who have doubt and are afraid about it, they cling to beliefs. They say, I believe, but they have no faith. Deep down they know their doubt. They are always afraid about it. So if you touch, criticize their belief, they will get immediately angry. Why? Why this anger, irritation? They are not irritated by you. They are irritated by their own doubt which you are helping to come up. If a man of faith is there, you can criticize him. He is not going to get angry, because you cannot destroy his faith. Ramakrishna is the type, or Chaitanya, or Mira. They are the types of feeling types. One of the most critical minds of Bengal, Kesava Chandra, went to meet Ramakrishna, not just to meet, but to defeat him. Because Ramakrishna was just an illiterate. Not a scholar at all. And Kesava Chandra was one of the greatest minds ever born on Indian soil. One of the most keen logical intellect. It was certain that Ramakrishna will be defeated. When Kesava came All the intellectuals of Calcutta gathered at Dakshineswar just to see Ramakrishna defeated. And Keshav Chandra started arguing. But he must have felt very awkward, because Ramakrishna enjoyed his arguments very much, rather too much. And when he will propose some argument against God, Ramakrishna will start jumping, dancing. So he felt very awkward and he said, "What are you doing? You have to answer my arguments." Ramakrishna is reported to have said that, "Seeing you, my faith is strengthened." Such an intellect is impossible without God. That's how a feeling type looks at things. "And I predict," said Ramakrishna, "that sooner or later you will be a greater devotee than me, because you have a greater mind. With such a mind, how can you fight divine? With such a keen mind, even a fool idiot like me has reached. How can you remain without reaching?" Not angry, not arguing, but he defeated Keshav Chandra. Keshav touched his feet and he said, "You are the first atheist I have met. Now, the argument is futile. Looking at your eyes, looking at you and the way you have behaved with me, this is the first glimpse for me that divine is possible. You are the proof. Without giving any proof, Ramakrishna became the proof." Intellectual type has to proceed through doubt. Don't force any belief upon you. That will be deceiving yourself. You cannot deceive anyone else. You can only deceive yourself. Don't force. Be authentic. If doubt is your nature, then proceed through doubt. Doubt as much as possible. And don't choose any technique which is based on faith. That is not for you. Choose some technique which is scientifically experimental. No need to believe. There are two types of methods. One, which is experimental. You are not said to believe, you are said to do it. And the consequence will be the belief, the faith. A scientist cannot believe. He can take a hypothesis to work out experiment. If the experiment comes right, if the experiment proves that the hypothesis is right, then he reaches to a conclusion. Faith is achieved through experiment. So there are techniques in these 112 techniques which need not require any faith on your part. That's why Mahavir, Buddha, they are intellectual types. Just as Ramakrishna, Chaitanya are feeling types. Because of this, Buddha says there is no need to believe in God. There is no God. Do what I say. Don't believe in me. Experiment with what I say. And if your experience proves it's right, then you can believe it. So Buddha says, don't believe in me. Don't believe what I say. Don't believe because I have said it. Experiment with it. Go through it. And until you achieve your own conclusion, remain in doubt. Your own experience will become your faith. Mahavir says, no need to believe in anyone, not even in the guru, in the teacher. Just do the technique. Science never says to believe. It says do the experiment. Go to the lab. This is one section for the intellectual type. Don't try faith before you do the experiment. You cannot do it. You will falsify everything. Be real unto yourself. Remain real and authentic. So sometimes it has happened. Even atheists have reached the divine because their truth about themselves. Mahavir is an atheist. He doesn't believe in God. Buddha is an atheist. He doesn't believe in any God. So a miracle happened with Buddha. It is said about him that he was the most godless man and the most godlike. Both godless, godlike. Absolutely intellectual. But he reached because he never deceived himself. He went on doing experiments. For 6 years continuously, he was doing this experiment and that and that. And he will not believe unless something is proved by experience true. He will not believe. So he will do, and if nothing happened, he will leave it. So one day he reached. Just by doubting, experimenting, a point came when nothing remained to be doubted. The doubt fell without any object. There was no object now to doubt. He has doubted everything. Even doubt became futile. Doubt dropped, and in that doubting he realized. Then he realized that the doubt was not the real thing, the doubter. And you cannot doubt the doubter. It is there, the consciousness, which says, no, this is not right. It may not be right, it may be right. But who is saying this is not right or this is right? That source of saying is right, is true. You can say there is no God. You cannot say I am not. Because the moment you say I am not, you have accepted yourself. Who is making this statement? You cannot deny yourself without at the same time recognizing yourself. That's impossible. Even to deny, you have to be there. You cannot say to someone, some guest who is knocking at the door, that I am not in the house. How can you say this? This is absurd. Because your saying that I am not in the house proves that you are there. Buddha doubted everything, but he couldn't doubt himself. And when everything was doubted and became useless, ultimately he was thrown to himself, where doubt was impossible. Doubt fell. Suddenly he awakened to his own reality, to his own source of consciousness, the very God of consciousness. So he was godless but became godlike. Really, on this earth, a more godlike person has never walked. But his insistence was intellectual. Both types of techniques are there. If you feel you are intellectual, confused, doubting, don't try faith techniques. They are not for you. Every technique is not for everyone. If you have faith, there is no need to try any other method. No need. If you have faith, then try those methods which require faith as a presupposition. But be authentic. That is basic, very essential to be remembered continuously. It is very easy to deceive. Very easy to deceive. Because we imitate. You may start imitating Ramakrishna without knowing that you are not of that type. If you imitate, you will be an imitation. Nothing real will happen to you. You can imitate Buddha. This is happening every day because we are born in religions. Because of that, much nonsense continues. You cannot be born in a religion. You have to choose. Religion has nothing to do with blood, bones, birth, nothing. Someone is born a Buddhist. He may be a feeling type, but he will follow Buddha. Then his whole life will be wasted. Someone is born an intellectual type. He may be born a mountain. He may be born in a devotion cult. His life will be wasted, or he will become false. The whole world is irreligious because religion is fullestly associated with birth. There is no relationship at all. You have to choose consciously, because first you have to understand your type, and then you have to choose. The world will be deeply religious the day we allow everyone to choose his religion, method, technique, path. But religion has become organization, political organization. That's why the moment a child is born, we force religion upon him. We condition him into a religion. The parents are afraid he may move into another organization. Before he becomes conscious, he must be destroyed, crippled, forced. Before he becomes conscious and can think about things, his mind must be patient, so he cannot think freely. You cannot think freely, because whatsoever you think has been preconditioned. I was reading Bertrand Russell. He says, intellectually, I conceive Buddha to be greater than Jesus. But deep down in my heart, that is impossible. Jesus is greater than Buddha. At the most, if I force myself, then I will put them parallel, equal. Intellectually, I feel Buddha is a giant. Jesus is nothing before him. Why this feeling? Because Bertrand Russell himself is the intellectual type. So Buddha has appeal for him. Jesus has no appeal. But the mind has been conditioned into Christianity. It is not true, because these comparisons are meaningless. They simply show something about Bertrand Russell, neither about Buddha nor about Jesus. Because no comparison is possible. For someone who is of the feeling type, Jesus will look greater than Buddha. But if he is a Buddhist, born Buddhist, it will be difficult. His own mind will feel unease if he thinks that someone is greater than Buddha. Difficult. Impossible in a way. Because whatsoever you think has been fed into you, it has been already fed. Your mind is functioning like a computer. The information has been fed. Evaluation has been fed. You are already based on some notions, conceptions, traditions. You cannot throw them away easily. That's why religion is just a word. Very few people can become religious because very few people can rebel against their own conditionings. Only a revolutionary mind can become religious. Who can see at things, facts, and then decide what to do? But feel your time. Try to feel your time. It is not difficult. The first thing, if you feel confused, you are the intellectual type. If you feel certain, trusting, then proceed on different techniques which require trust as a basic thing. And remember, secondly, never do both the techniques. They will create more confusion in you. Nothing is wrong. Both are right. Ramakrishna is right. Buddha is right. Remember one thing. In this world, many things can lead you to the truth. Many paths. There is no monopoly. Even contradictory paths, absolutely contradictory paths, can lead you to the same point. There is no one path. On the contrary, if you go deep and analyze, you will come to know that there are as many paths as many there are travelers. Because each individual has to proceed from the point he is standing already. He cannot use a ready-made path. Basically, you create your path by your movement. There is no ready-made path already there. There are no highways ready-made. But every religion tries to force this idea that the path is ready, you have just to travel over it. That's wrong. This inner search is more like a sky than earth. A bird is flying. He will leave no footprints in the sky. The sky will remain vacuum. The bird has flown. He has not left any footprint. No bird can follow in his footprints. The sky is again empty. Again, the world, any world who has sky, will create his own path. Consciousness is like a sky, not like earth. A Mahavir moves, a Buddha moves, a Meera moves, a Muhammad moves. You can see their movement, you can see their achievement, but the moment they move, the path disappears. You cannot follow deadly, you cannot imitate. You have to find out your own path. First, think about your type and then choose matters. In these 112 methods, many are for the intellectual type, many are for the emotional type. But don't think that because you are a mixed type, you have to follow both. That will create more confusion. And you will be divided so deeply that you may even go mad, schizophrenic. Split. Don't do that. The second question, to know that is certain, you said yesterday. This seems to be the approach of Buddha, who was a life negative. But Tantra's approach is a life affirmative, not negative. So how this death orientation can be used in Tantra? Buddha is not really life negative. He appears. He appears to be life negative because he focuses on death. To us, he appears in love with death. He is not. On the contrary, he is in love with eternal life. To find out that life which is deathless, he focuses on death. Death is not his love. He has to focus on death just to find out something which is beyond death. And Buddha says, if there is nothing beyond death, then life is futile. But only then, life is futile. He never says life is futile. He says, if nothing is beyond death, then life is futile. And your life, he says, is futile because your life is not beyond death. Whatsoever you think is your life is just part of death. You are befooled by death. You think it is life and it is nothing but death on its way. A man is born, he is on his way to die. Whatsoever he becomes, whatsoever he achieves, possesses, nothing will help. He is moving towards death. This so-called life is moving towards death. How we can call it life? That last question. life which moves towards death, how we can call it life? Life which implies death inevitably is just a hidden death, not life. It is gradual death. By and by you are dying, and you go on thinking that you are living. Right now you feel you are living, but you are dying. Every moment you are losing life and gaining death. A tree is known by its fruits, Buddha says. So this tree of life cannot be called life because death is the fruit. A tree is known by its fruit. And if in this tree of life only fruits of death come, then we were deceived by the tree. And another thing, if a tree gives a particular fruit, it shows that that particular fruit was the seed of the tree. Otherwise, this fruit cannot come out of the tree. So if life gives the fruit of death, death must have been the seed. We can understand it. You are born, and you think that birth is the beginning. That is not. Before this birth, you died in another life. That death was the seed of this birth. And then again, death will become the fruit. And that fruit will become the seed for another birth. Birth leads to death. Death precedes birth. So if you want to see life as it is really, it is rounded about by both the sides by death. Death is the beginning and death is again the end. And life is just the illusion in between. You feel alive between two deaths. The passage joining one death to another, you call life. Buddha says this is not life. This life is dukkha, misery. This life is death. That's why he appears to us who are deeply alive, hypnotized, obsessed to be alive in any way. Just to be alive seems to be the end. We are so much afraid of death that Buddha looks in love with death, and that looks abnormal. He seems to be suicidal. This is what many have criticized Buddha for. Albert Savitja has criticized Buddha because he feels that Buddha is obsessed with death. He is not obsessed with death. We are obsessed with life. He is simply analyzing things, finding out what is the effect. And the more deeper you go, you will find he is right. Your life is just false face taken by death. Just a dressing. Inside is death. Then he focuses on death because he says, if I can find out what death is, only then I can find out what life is. And if I can know what death and life both are, then the possibility that I may transcend both and know something which is beyond birth, death, beyond both. He is not negative, not life denying. But he looks. Tantra looks life affirmative. But that again is our interpretation. Neither Buddha is life denying and nor Tantra is life affirmative. The search is the same. Buddha focuses on death, Tantra focuses on life. Both are one. So wherever you start. But go so deeply that you come to know the other also. Buddha focuses at the end, death. Tantra focuses on the beginning, life. That's why Buddha seems to be too much in love with death and Tantra seems to be too much in love with sex, love, body, life. Because in the end is death and in the beginning is sex. Because Tantra focuses itself with the beginning, sex becomes very important. So how to go deep and know what sex is? How to reveal the mystery of love? How to penetrate in the beginning, in the seed, so that you can go beyond? That is Tantra approach. Buddha focuses on death and he says how to meditate deeply on death, move into it and know the whole reality of it. Both are two ends of the same thing. Sex is death. And death is very sexual. It will be difficult to understand. There are many insects which die with their first intercourse. The first sex act and death happens. There is a species of spiders in Africa. The male dies in copulation. He cannot come down from the copulation. He is just on the female. Dies there. The first copulation becomes death. And it is very horrible. The moment he dies, not even really dead, is still in the pangs of death. The moment the spider, male spider, ejaculates, death starts. And the female starts eating him. He never dismounts. The female starts eating him. By the time the sexual act is finished, he is half eaten. Sex and death are so involved. Because of this, men became afraid of sex. And those who want to live more are fascinated with a long life. They will be always afraid of sex. And those who think that they can become immortals, brahmacharya, will be their cult. No one has been yet immortal. And no one can be. Because you are born out of sex. If you are born out of brahmacharya, then it is possible. If your father and mother were celibate, then only you can be immortal. Because sex has entered already with your birth. You go in sex or not makes no difference. You cannot escape death. Your very being starts with sex, and sex is the beginning of death. Because of this, Christians say Jesus was born from a virgin mother. Just to say that he is no martyr, ordinary martyr. He was born to a virgin mother. He is no ordinary martyr. Just to say that death has no power over him, they had to create this myth. This is a part of a long myth. If he is born out of sex, then death will have its power over him. He cannot escape death. With sex, death enters. So he was born without any sex act. He was not a sexual byproduct. So they say, because he was a son of a virgin mother, he could revive again, resurrect. They crucified him, but they couldn't kill him. He remained alive because he was not a sex byproduct. You cannot kill. And if really Jesus is born out of a virgin mother, it is impossible to kill him. It is impossible to kill him. Death is impossible. Because the beginning is not how the end can be. If he is not born out of a virgin mother, then death will be the second inevitable end. The whole myth has to be maintained. If you say he is not born out of a virgin mother, then the second part of the myth, resurrection, becomes false. If you say he resurrected, denied death, escaped death, death couldn't kill him, he couldn't be crucified really. Those who were crucifying him were deceived. He was alive and he remained alive. Then you have to maintain the first part of the myth. I'm not saying anything far or against. I'm simply saying that the whole myth can be maintained. One part cannot be maintained. If sex is there at birth, then death will be there. Because of this deep association, oneness, many times many societies have become afraid of sex. That fear is of death. And even you accept sex, but a certain fear remains there. Even if you move in sex, a certain fear remains there. No one allows himself a total let go in it. The fear is there. You are on guard. You cannot go totally in it. You cannot let go yourself completely, because that let go is just like death. Neither Tantra is for your life, nor Buddha is against the real life. Tantra starts from one part, the beginning. Buddha starts with the end. And Tantra is more scientific than Buddha, because it is always good to begin at the beginning. You are already born. Death is far away. Birth has occurred. you can work on it more deeply, death has to occur. It is still in imagination. It is not a reality to you. And when you see someone die, you never see death. You see someone dying. Never the death, the process which happens to him inside. You cannot see it. It is invisible. It is individual. And the individual himself cannot say anything. Because the moment he goes through the process, he is no more. He cannot come back, a step back, and tell what is happening. So whatsoever is known about death is just inference. No one knows anything about death, actually, unless you can remember your past lives. Then you can know something about death actually, because you have died many times. That's why Buddha has revived many techniques about remembering past lives, because this death is in future. How can you concentrate on it? How can you meditate on it? It has not happened yet. It is very vague, dark, unknown. And what can you do? You can only think something about it, but that thinking will also be borrowed. You will be repeating others. Someone has said something about that, you will be repeating it. How can you meditate on death? You can see others dying, but that's not real entrance into it. You are just an outsider. It is just like if someone is eating sweet. You look at him. What can you feel? What is happening to him? What taste? What sweetness? What fragrance is happening to him? What is going on in him? You cannot know. You can just look at the mouth, the behavior, or you can see the expression on his face. But this is all inference, not actual experience, unless he says something. But whatsoever he says will be a word to you, not an experience again. Buddha says about his past deaths, no one believes him. If I say you something about my past death, deep down, you will not believe it. How can you believe it? Because you don't have any approach to the reality of it. Just you are close to birth. And then death has not come yet. It always happens to others. It has not happened to you yet. Difficult to meditate on death. As a base, you will have to move into past lives. You will have to go in digging past memories. Buddha, Mahavir, they both used the technique of jati smaran, the technique of going into past lives. Only then you can meditate on death. Tantra is more scientific. It starts with life, with birth, with sex, which is a fact to you. Death is still a fiction. But remember, the end of both is the same. They both are in search of eternal life, life which is deathless. Either transcend the beginning or transcend the end. Either jump from one pole or from another. And remember, you can jump out of it only from a pole. You cannot jump from the middle. If I want to jump out of this room, either I have to move to this side, to the extreme, or to that side, to the extreme. from the middle of the room, I cannot jump out of it. Because jumping is possible from the extreme pole only, and there are two extreme poles in life, birth and death. Tantra starts from birth, more scientific, more realistic. You are already in it. You can meditate upon it. Sex is a fact. You can meditate upon it. You can move deeply in it. Death is not a fact. A very rare mind is needed to conceive death. A very keen intellect is needed to penetrate into the future. Rarely a Buddha will conceive death so deeply that the future becomes present. But it is always for rare individuals. Tantra can be used by anyone who has any interest, who has any search to know what real life is. But Tantra also uses death just to help you move inwards. Not to meditate on it, not to jump out of it, but to help you move inwards. Buddha also talks about birth, just to make it a part of meditation for death. The other part can be used as help, but it is not the center. Tantra says, if you can think about death, your life will take a different meaning, shape and significance. Your mind will start thinking into new dimensions, which without death will be difficult, or impossible even. The moment you begin to feel that this life is going to end in a certain death, the death becomes a certainty. You cannot cling to this life. And mind starts moving beyond. That's what I was saying yesterday. If you think about just this life, your mind will go without, will go out and out and out to the objects. If you begin to look and see that death is hidden everywhere, you cannot cling to objects. Your mind will start moving inwards. Just the other day, a young girl came to me. She is an Indian girl, fell in love with an American boy. But after she fell in love, and they were just thinking and planning to get married, the boy fell ill, and it was discovered, diagnosed, that he is a certain type of cancer, incurable. Death is certain. He can be alive 2 or 3 or 4 years at the most. The boy tried to persuade the girl now not to marry him, because death is so certain. Why waste your life with me? But the more he insisted, this is how mind functions, the more he insisted, the more the girl became adamant to marry him. And this is how mind works in paradoxes. If I would have been in the place of that boy, I would have insisted to marry. Then the girl would have escaped. Then there was no possibility of marriage. then I would not have seen that girl again. But the boy insisted out of his love, but out of a foolish mind, without knowing how mind functions. He insisted not to marry. Anyone would have done the same. And because he was insisting, then the girl felt it a matter of conscience. She insisted to marry. And then they got married. Now, after marriage, the girl is surrounded constantly by death. She is sad. She cannot love the boy. It is easy to die for anyone. It is very difficult to live. It is very easy to die. To be a martyr is such an easy thing. Such an easy thing to be a martyr. Because it is a momentary thing. You can do it in a single moment. If you love me and I say you jump out of this building, you can jump because you say I love you. But if I say, okay, live with me for 30 years, very difficult. Very difficult. Because you can become a martyr in a single moment. To die for something is the easiest thing in the world. To live for something is the most arduous and difficult. She became a martyr. But now, she has to live with constant death present. She cannot love. She cannot see the face of her husband. Because the moment she says the cancer is there, the death is there, just by the corner, any moment it can happen. So she is in constant agony. What has happened? Death has become a certainty. Now life has no interest for her. Everything has dropped and become death. She came just to meet me from America. She wants to meditate. Because life seems futile. Life has become equivalent to cancer. So now she was here asking me, teach me meditation. How can I move beyond life? Unless life becomes futile, you never think about moving beyond. So I told her that apparently it looks very unfortunate, her marriage. It may prove very fortunate. Everyone's husband is going to die, it's certain. Everybody's wife is going to die, but it is not certain. Death is certain, only dead is not certain. And who knows, even death may be certain, you don't know it. That's why ignorance is very blissful. She could have loved that boy if still they were ignorant. But apparently nothing is wrong. But now, love has become impossible. Life has become impossible. Death is always there, constantly present between the two. So I asked her, why are you not loving him more? Because he is going to die. Love him more. She says, how can I love? We are always three. The privacy is love. I'm there, my husband there, and between the two, the death. There is no privacy left. Death is too much. Impossible to live with it. It can become a turning. So if you can become aware of death, Tantra says, use it as a turning in words. No need to go into details about death. No need to go on contemplating about it. Don't make it an obsession. Just awareness that death is there. will help you to move inwards, to be meditative. Third question, how can the mind be transcended and transformed only by bringing the body to a death-like state? Mind is constantly active. While you are active, meditation is impossible. Because meditation means a deep inactivity. You can know yourself only when everything has become still, silent and quiet. Only then, in that silence, you happen to encounter yourself. Otherwise, in activity, you are so much occupied with something or other, you cannot feel your own presence. You go on forgetting yourself. Continuously, with this or that object, you go on forgetting yourself. Activity means related with something outside. You are active because you are related with something outside. Doing something outside. Inactivity means you have returned home. You are not doing anything. In Greek language, leisure is called school. The word, English word school, comes from Greek word school, means leisure. You can learn something only when you are at leisure. Learning happens in leisure. If you are active, doing this and that, you cannot learn. So schools were for leisure class. Those who could afford leisure, their children were sent to schools, leisure places. They were not to do anything but to learn. They were allowed total inactivity as far as the world is concerned. They were freed from all worldly activity and then they could learn. Similar is the phenomena. If you want to learn your presence, you will have to be completely inactive. Completely inactive. Just being, not doing anything. All the ripples have ceased. All activity evaporated. You are, simply you are. In that moment, for the first time you become aware of your own presence. Why? Because the presence is so subtle. Occupied with the gross objects, engaged with the gross activity, you cannot become aware of such a subtle presence. It is a very silent music, your presence, and you are so much filled with noise, and every type of noise is occupying you. You cannot hear that still small voice within. Cease being engaged in outward noises, activities, then that still small voice for the first time is heard. That soundless sound, that soundless music is felt. You enter the subtle, leave the grass. Activity is grass. Inactivity is subtle. And your presence is the subtlest thing in the world. To feel that, you will have to cease you will have to be absent from everywhere. So your total presence comes in and can encounter yourself. That's why in many techniques this is suggested, that make your body as if it is dead. It means simply inactive, like a dead man. Meditating, let your body enter death. It will be imagination, but even that will help. Don't say that how imagination can help. Imagination has its own functions. If you imagine, for example, now scientific experiments are available. You sit down, call a doctor, he is observing your pulse rate. Inside, you just start being angry. Imagine fighting, angry. Your pulse rate will go high. Inside, just imagine you are dying. You are just going to die. Become silent and feel death descending. Your pulse rate will come down. Pulse rate is very fidgetous. And you were just imagining. Imagination is not unreal. It is also real. If you can imagine really, even real death can occur. If you can imagine really, you can affect physical things. In hypnosis, you might have observed some hypnotic soap. You can do it easily at home. It is not difficult, very easy. Use your child as the medium. If the child is a girl, it is better than a boy, because boy is more doubting than a girl. And a boy is always in a fighting mood than in a cooperative mood. Boy means that, a fighting mood. Cooperation is needed. And just tell the child to relax and go on suggesting that you are going in deep trance, going in deep trance, going in deep trance, falling asleep. Your eyelids are becoming heavy, heavy, heavier. And use a monotonous voice, heavier, heavier, heavier. Monotonous, as if you are also going sleepy. Within 5 minutes, the child will be fast asleep. This is not ordinary sleep. This is hypnotic trance. It is basically qualitatively different from sleep. Because now the child can hear only your voice. Nothing he can hear, as he can hear. If someone else talks, the child is deaf. If you talk, the person who has hypnotized him, he still hears. He will follow your orders. Try to do some experiments. Just say to the child that this is a burning hot coal I am putting on your hand. You will be burned. Put any ordinary thing in the child's hand. A piece of stone, cold, nothing hot about it. The child will throw it immediately, because the mind has got the suggestion it is a burning coal, hot, and the child's hand is going to be burnt. He will throw it, he will scream, as if something heart has touched. But the miracle happens. Really, you will know that his hand is burnt. What has happened? There was no possibility of burning by a cold stone. But the child is burnt, exactly as if there was a burning coal put in his hand. Just imagination. That's why those who have penetrated human mind, they say, imagination is a fact, as real as anything. Imagination is not just imagination, because it results into actual facts. So this experiment fall down on the ground, lie still, and feel you are going to die. The body is becoming dead. By and by you will feel a heaviness coming over the body. The whole body will become a dead weight, leaden weight. Tell yourself that even if I want to remove my hands from the position it is, I cannot remove it. And then try to remove, and you will not be able to remove it. Now the imagination is working. In this state, when you feel the body has become a dead weight, you can cut off from the world of activities easily. That's why this is suggested. You can become now inactive because of it. And now when you feel everything has died and the bridge is broken from you to the world, body is the bridge. If body is dead, you cannot do anything. Can you do anything without the body? You cannot do anything without the body. Any activity is through the body. Mind can think about it, but cannot do it. You have become impotent. You cannot do anything. You are inside, the world is outside, and the vehicle is dead, and the bridge is broken. In this state of broken bridge, body dead, your energy will start moving inwards, because there is no way to move out. The outer way is closed and blocked. Now, move inwards. See yourself standing at the heart center. Look within to the details of the body. You will feel very strange, and for the first time you can look from within your own body. Tantra, yoga, Ayurveda, all old physiological doctrines, they were revealed, are known through such inner meditative techniques. The modern physiology is known through dissection. The ancient physiology was known through meditation, not dissection. And now there is a school of very avant-garde medical thinkers who say that when you dissect a body and come to know something, you come to know something which is dead. And whatsoever you infer from a dead part is irrelevant to a live body. They may be right. If you take my blood out and then examine it, you are examining dead blood. It is not the same blood which was in me. Outwardly it is the same, but in me it was a live process, a live current, a life. part of a mechanism, of an organic whole. Now it is dead. It is as if you pull my eyes out and then examine them. When they were with me, I was behind them and in them. Now they are dead stones. And whatsoever you come to know about those eyes is not about my eyes, because the basic, essential part is missing. I am not there. And those eyes were part of a big whole. Their whole quality consisted in being part of a big whole. Now they are independent, not part of anything. The pattern is lost. The lived context is lost. Older traditions of yoga and tantra say, unless you can come to know the alive body, your knowledge is false. But how to come to know alive? There is only one way. If you enter in yourself and move within to see the details of the body, a different world was revealed through these techniques. An alive world. So the first thing, be centered at the heart, look around your body, move. Two things will happen. One, you will not feel now that you are the body. You cannot feel. You are the observer. One who is aware, alert, looking at, not be looked at. For the first time, body will become just a clothing. You will be different from it. And the second, immediately you will feel, I cannot die. This will seem strange. Using a method, imaginary method of death, and then coming to deathless point, you will come to know, suddenly, I cannot die. Why? Because you have seen others die. What has happened to them? Their body has become dead. That's why you inferred they are dead. Now you can see the whole body is lying dead and you are alive. So bodily death is not your death. Body dies, you move on. And if you persist in this technique, it is not very difficult and very far away when you can come out of your body and look your body from without, your body lying dead, just before you. Once you know it, you will not be the same person again. You are reborn. You have become a dvij, twice born. Now a new life starts. I was telling you yesterday about one astrologer who has promised to work on my life birth chart, who died before it. His son had to prepare the chart. But he was also puzzled. He said, it is almost certain that this man is going to die at the age of 21. Every 7 years, he will have to face death. So my parents, my family was always worried about my death. Whenever I will come to the 7-age barrier, they will become afraid. And he was right, because at the age of 7, I survived, but I had a deep experience of death, not of my own, but of my maternal grandfather's. And I was so much attached to him that his death appeared to be my own death. In my own childish way, I imitated his death. I will not eat for 3 days continuously, will not drink water, because I felt this to be a betrayal. I loved him so much, he loved me so much, that when he was alive, I was never allowed to go to my parents. I was with my maternal grandfather. He said, when I die, only then you can go. He lived in a very small village, so I couldn't go to any school because there was no school. And he will not leave me, and then he died. He was part and parcel. I had grown with his presence, his love. When he died, I felt it, that it will be a betrayal to eat. Now I don't want to live. It was childish, but through it, something very deep happened. For 3 days, I remained lying down. I will not come out of the bed. I said, well, he is dead. I don't want to live. I survived, but those 3 days became a death experience. I died in a way. And I came to realize, no, I can say about it. That time it was just a bad experience. I came to feel that death is impossible. This was a feeling. Then at the age of 14, my family again became disturbed that I will be dying. I again survived, but then I consciously again tried. I said to them that if death is going to occur, as the astrologer has said, then it is better to be prepared. And why give a chance to death? Why I should not go and meet half the way? If I am going to die, then it is better to die consciously. So I took leave from my school for 7 days. I went to my principal and told him that I am going to die. So he said, what nonsense you are talking? Are you committing suicide? What do you mean you are going to die? So I showed him the astrologer's prediction that he says every seven years. So I am going into retreat for 7 days to wait for death. If death comes, it is good to meet consciously so that it becomes an experience. So I went in a temple just outside of my village. I arranged with the priest that he should not disturb me. It was a very lonely, unvisited temple, old, in ruins. No one ever came to it. So I told him, I will remain in the temple. You just give me once something to eat and something to drink, and the whole day I will be lying there waiting for death. Seven days I waited. Those 7 days became a beautiful experience. Death never came. But on my part, I tried in every way to be dead. It's true. strange, weird feelings happened. Many things happened. But the basic note was this, that if you are feeling you are going to die, you become calm and silent. Nothing creates then any worry, because all worries are concerned with life. Life is the base of all worries. When you are going to die, one day I was lying there, the third or fourth day, one snake entered the temple. It was a real. I was seeing the snake, but there was no fear. Suddenly, I felt very strange. The snake was coming near and near, and I felt very strange. There was no fear. So I told, when death is coming, it may be coming through the snake, so why be afraid? Wait. The snake crossed over me, went away. Fear disappeared. If you accept death, there is no fear. If you cling to life, then every fear is there. Many times flies will come and around me. They will go on, they will creep over me, on my face. Sometimes I will feel irritated and would like to throw them away. But then I will think that what is the use? Sooner or later I am going to die, and then no one will be here to protect the body, so let them have their way. The moment I decided let them have their way, the irritation disappeared. They were still on the body, but as if I was not concerned. They were as if moving, creeping on someone else's body. There was a distance immediately. If you accept death, a distance is created. Life moves far away with all its worries, irritations, everything. I died in a way, but I came to know that something deathless is there. Once you accept death totally, you become aware of it. Then again, at the age of 21, my family was waiting, so I told them, why you go on waiting? Don't wait. Now I am not going to die. Physically, someday I will die. But this prediction of the astrologer has helped me very much, because he made me aware very early about death. And continuously I could meditate and could accept it. It was coming. Death can be used for deep meditations, because you become inactive. Energy is released from the world. It can move inwards. That's why death-like posture is suggested. Use life, use death for discovering that which is beyond both. Enough for today.